Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Miller Lite. Triple hops brewed Miller Lite. Taste greatness.
Gotta be another way out. I've been stuck in a cage with my doubt. I've tried forever getting out on my own. Every time I do this my way, I get caught in the lies of the enemy. I lay my troubles down. I'm ready for you now. Bring me out. Come and find me in the dark now. Every day by myself I'm breaking down.
And you're listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 435. I'm Amy Matheny, and wow, new television has begun, folks, and we're kind of everywhere. We're everywhere you want to be, not only from the Emmys and a lot of the awards and amazing speeches from the crew who created Modern Family, which we got our props there, but Chaz Bono just being electric on Dancing with the Stars, and Carson Kressley, come on, kill me now. He was hilarious. I don't think anybody, you know, seriously, like I was in Tennessee and got my teeth cleaned this morning, and the lady who cleans my teeth, she was like, well, I was just so excited to see Chaz Bono, and then that Carson, I just hope he never goes off. He's just hilarious. So, there you go. She was like, I wonder what Nancy Grace is doing right now. If her rehearsals are going as well, Nancy Grace. So let me tell you, we are taking over. Not only that, but shot here in Chicago is the new drama, The Playboy Club. And that's just gay all over the place. Not only is the leading actress on the show. Is her name Amber Heard? Amber Head? Something like that. How I don't even know who she is. I have no idea. Amber Heard, I believe, is a lesbian. She's an out lesbian actress, like in her, you know, mid-20s, starring on the Playboy Club. There's a gay little currency there. Then you've got gay characters in the show itself. Looks like there's a couple that we've discovered in the first episode who is a lesbian and gay. She's a bunny. He's not. But they are really activists in the underground with the Mattachine Society here. That started in Chicago. And it's just, I mean, that's going to be interesting to see where that goes. And I knew there was a gay bunny, and I knew there was going to be some lesbo and gay male 1960s stuff around the Playboy Club. But I did not see the Mattachine Society moment. I did not know about that. So that was a lovely little surprise there at the end. So, and it's just going to continue. I think that gay characters, I'll be interested to see what GLAAD puts out, how many gay characters are cropping up all over television. Of course, we have Rizzoli and Isles, and they are just a 1-2 punch of gayness. Maria Bello on Prime Suspect. Not gay, but I don't know. Come on. A little gay. I'm speaking for the girls, of course. You guys, I don't know. I don't know who you're excited about, but you'll write me or phone in and let me know. I am excited as well because today, on September 20th, Don't Ask, Don't Tell was officially ended. Ended its horrible reign, And it ended today, and the Army distributed a statement saying the law is repealed. The Pentagon has given training for months and months and months since Obama made this announcement. And there, you should just go out and have a cocktail with a homo service person tonight. That's just what I think. I think we should buy cocktails for anyone gay who's ever been in the military. They should drink free tonight, and it should be a big party in the streets of whatever town you live in. There is a lot of news going on. We're going to bring you that, Kirk and I will. But today we're going to have a look back at the 6th Annual International AIDS Society Conference that was held in Rome. And Jim Pickett, who is our resident expert on all things HIV, AIDS, and male health related, is continuing a conversation we started about the prevention trial, PrEP. We've discussed it before in May, and we're talking about it again after all of the studies and the research started coming out, the results started coming out in Rome, and all of these leaders in HIV and AIDS prevention and treatment met and could actually discuss what is a really, really hot topic in the community. And we even have a new hot topic around HIV AIDS in our news today. So, hey, it's a big show. Let's get going.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Weekend News. Don't ask, don't tell. It's over. Repeal of an 18-year-old law that allowed gays to serve only so long as they stayed closeted took effect September 20th at 12:01 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Army distributed a statement saying the law is repealed and reminding soldiers to treat each other with respect. The Pentagon said that 97% of the military has undergone training in the new law. Many gay rights organizations held end of Don't Ask, Don't Tell celebrations around the country.
The North Carolina legislature has placed an anti-marriage equality amendment on the May 2012 ballot. The state Senate passed the proposal 30-16 after the House voted 75-42 in favor of it. Currently, 29 states have constitutional amendments banning same-sex marriage.
Cornell Jones, the director of HIV-AIDS nonprofit Miracle Hands Incorporated, recently called two openly gay Washington, D.C. council members faggots and accused them of having a racist agenda. Councilman David Catania and Jim Graham requested that the Attorney General conduct a probe of Miracle Hands' financial dealings. The Attorney General is now suing Miracle Hands for allegedly diverting more than $300,000 to what is now a new dancing establishment.
In Sugar Land, Texas, dozens of pro-gay individuals protested Exodus International's conference. The Orlando, Florida-based organization hosted Love One Out, an event aimed at educating people on resisting same-sex urges.
In Waterloo, Iowa, police have arrested Paris Akeem Anding, 19, on charges of second-degree murder in the beating death of gay man Marcellus Andrews. Iowa police have not yet investigated the murder of Andrews, also 19, as a hate crime, despite witnesses saying they heard anti-gay slurs during the beating. Andrews' family added that it's not a hate crime because effeminate behavior doesn't make a man gay.
The undergraduate wing of Harvard University, Harvard College, has hired Lisa Forrest as its first director of LGBTQ student life. Forrest currently heads the GLBT and Allied Pride Center at Bridgewater State University in Massachusetts.
The National Collegiate Athletic Association, or NCAA, has announced that it has approved a policy that clarifies opportunities for transgender student athletes to participate on college athletic teams in accordance with their gender identity. The NCAA, which governs sports for more than 1,200 colleges and institutions, worked closely with the NCLR's Sports Project and Griffin Educational Consulting to develop the policy, which will allow a transgender student athlete to participate in sex-separated sports activities so long as the athlete's use of hormone therapy is consistent with the NCAA policies and current medical standards.
Rick Welts, the openly gay president and CEO of the NBA's Phoenix Suns, announced his resignation. He is actually moving to Sacramento, California to be closer to his partner.
In Connecticut, congressional candidate Mike Williams' domestic partner, Bart Hodemacher, may be deported under current immigration laws. Hodemacher, a Dutch national, is in the United States on a work visa and will lose his job at the end of September under immigration law influenced by DOMA. He faces deportation. DOMA prevents the United States citizen from sponsoring a same-sex spouse.
University of Pennsylvania doctors have used a disabled form of HIV-1 to deliver new genes that would train a person's own cells to attack cancer. The physicians have tried the experimental treatment in 3 leukemia patients. 2 went into full remission, while the other has had a partial remission. They published the results of their experiment with the first patient in both the New England Journal of Medicine and Science Translational Medicine.
The Oregon GOP will strip anti-gay language from next year's platform to bring the party more to the center, as the Democratic Party has traditionally dominated state politics. The Republican Party will drop language that condemns marriage equality, civil unions, and same-sex parenting.
Walter C. Wright, an Episcopal bishop who advocated the ordination of gays and women, has died at the age of 87 outside Pittsburgh after a lengthy illness. Opponents filed heresy charges against Wright, but charges were dismissed against him in 1996.
In what some are calling a stunning upset, Republican political novice Bob Turner defeated Democratic Assemblyman David Weprin in a special election to replace former Congressman Anthony Weiner, the Democrat from New York. Democrats have a 3-to-1 registration margin in the New York City district, but the electoral result is being viewed as voter frustration over the economy and President Obama's policies.
Democratic New Hampshire Governor John Lynch will not seek a record 5th term. In 2009, Lynch signed a marriage equality law the state legislature passed.
In Georgia, a 7-year-old who was born a girl has been banned from using the boys' bathroom at a school, despite the child insisting that she's, or he's, actually a male. Tommy Thielen, the child's father, who actually gave birth a year before beginning his own gender change, said he wants school officials to recognize his child as a boy. Thielen recently presented a petition to the McIntosh Board of Education containing approximately 40,000 signatures supporting him and his son, nicknamed B.
In Philadelphia, the National Liberty Museum will honor gay couple Franz Raubauer and Brian Daggett as the 2011 collector honorees. The couple owns a glass art collection that has grown to more than 70 pieces. The museum is home to 125 pieces of glass art, which are included in each of the venue's exhibits.
In world news, FIFA, the governing body of international soccer, is launching an investigation of homophobia in women's soccer. The body will investigate charges against Nigerian coach Ucheria Uke, activist organization All Out, the Federation of Gay Games, and the International Gay and Lesbian Football Association gathered 46,000 signatures on a petition asking FIFA to condemn homophobia in soccer.
In Tasmania, champion woodchopper David Foster has become an ally of gay-related issues, including marriage equality, after his daughter Sally came out as a lesbian. Foster spoke in support of same-sex marriage at a forum in Hobart, something he admits he would not have done before Sally's revelation.
Websites for Cuban expatriates have reported that a transgender man arrested during a raid of homosexuals, transvestites, and transsexuals in Old Havana died while in police custody. Nelson Linares Garcia, 34, apparently died of respiratory arrest after repeatedly warning he had hypertension. One of the expatriate sites reported that no autopsy was conducted.
Australia will now offer 3 options for its passports: male, female, and indeterminate. The policy removes unnecessary obstacles to recording a person's preferred gender in their passport. Those not identifying as male or female can check X instead of M or F.
In entertainment news, Kate Winslet said she's glad her son knows he may be gay. The Oscar-winning actress told V Magazine, "My son Joe turns to me the other day and says, 'One day I will have a girlfriend or a boyfriend. Which would you prefer?' And I said, 'My love, that would be entirely up to you, and it doesn't make any difference to me.' But that he knows." Winslet stars in the upcoming film Carnage with Jodie Foster.
Gwyneth Paltrow won Outstanding Guest Actress in a Comedy Series for Glee, while Justin Timberlake received Outstanding Guest Actor in a Comedy Series for his work on SNL. In addition, a group of 4 editors won for editing Lady Gaga presents the Monster Ball Tour at Madison Square Garden. Jim Parsons won for Big Bang, lead comedy actor, and Modern Family swept writing, directing, supporting actor, and actress for Julie Bowen and Ty Burrell.
Andy Whitfield, the former lead of the Starz show Spartacus Blood and Sand, died of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in Sydney, Australia at the age of 39. The Welsh-Australian actor was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in March 2010. 2 months later, he was declared cancer-free after completing treatment. In September of 2010, Whitfield left the series to resume treatment.
The PBS series Downton Abbey has entered the Guinness Book of World Records with the highest critical review ratings for a TV show. The miniseries featuring Dame Maggie Smith, Elizabeth McGovern, and Hugh Bonneville won 5 Emmys as well Sunday night.
Gay Archie Comics character Kevin Keller and his fiancée will marry in issue 16 of Life with Archie, on sale in January. Although the Life with Archie series looks at alternate futures for the main character, publishers said that Keller's adult life and marriage would be featured as well. The issue will also reveal that Keller has become a war hero and show how he met his husband.
NBC has picked up a comedy project from Ellen DeGeneres' production company that will star her wife, Portia de Rossi. The network has ordered a pilot episode of The Untitled Project, which centers around two sisters who dislike each other.
Two gay men with 12 children may get their own reality show on Oprah Winfrey's network. Phoenix couple Stephen and Roger Ham are raising 7 children between the ages of 2 and 16.
Transgender model Isis King is a contestant on America's Next Top Model All-Stars this season, and she won the first modeling challenge, which aired on September 14th.
And openly gay actor Neil Patrick Harris was honored with a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. In 2010, Harris won his first 2 Emmy Awards for his guest starring turn on the series Glee and his role as the host of the 63rd annual Tony Awards. Partner David Burka attended the ceremony with Harris. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hey, this is Colton Ford, and you're being turned on by the Windy City Queercast.
Culture Club, Culture Club, Culture Club. Theater,
music,
dance,
art,
performance,
provocative,
hilarious,
exciting,
weird,
innovative, campy,
edgy,
original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of September 19th, 2011, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Chicago Shakespeare Theater's Murder for Two is the killer new musical that delivers fun to die for, says the Sun-Times. A hilarious whodunit featuring two virtuoso performances as one actor investigates a crime and the other plays all 13 suspects, and both play the piano. Extended by popular demand through October 16th, for more, visit chicagoshakes.com/murder.
Tony Award-winning choreographer Twyla Tharp returns to Hubbard Street Dance Chicago with a world premiere. You won't want to miss this night of amazing contemporary dance. Only 4 performances, October 13th through 16th at the Harris Theater in Millennium Park. Tickets start at only $25 and are available now at hubbardstreetdance.com.
The hunt is on and the monsters are on the run. New Millennium Theater Company presents Scott Janis, Monster Hunter, a salute to classic camp horror filmmakers presented in 4D, Sensoround, and Smell-O-Vision. Fridays and Saturdays at 11 p.m. through October 29th at Theater Wit, 1229 West Belmont. Tickets at nmtchicago.org.
Lifeline Theater opens its 29th anniversary season of Big Stories Up Close with a world premiere adaptation of Alexandre Dumas' legendary classic, The Count of Monte Cristo. Running Thursday through Sunday through October 30th. For more, visit lifelinetheater.com.
From musical theater legend Stephen Schwartz comes the premiere of Snapshots, a musical scrapbook, a romantic musical comedy featuring songs from Broadway favorites Wicked, Godspell, Pippin, and more. Snapshots is now playing at Northlight Theater. Visit northlight.org.
Don't miss The Kid Thing by lesbian playwright Sarah Gubbins. When two lesbian couples get together for a dinner party, the unexpected news of an impending pregnancy rocks both relationships. For tickets, visit aboutfacetheater.com. Playing now through October 16th at Chicago Dramatists, 1105 West Chicago Avenue.
Victory Gardens presents In the Next Room or The Vibrator Play, Sarah Rule's Tony-nominated comedy about female sexuality, intimacy, and marriage in the twilight of the Victorian age. For tickets, visit victorygardens.org. In the Next Room or The Vibrator Play is playing now. And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Hello, Deb Pierce here, letting you know that we'd love to hear back from you. So go ahead. You know you want to. Post a comment.
Tattoo.
up on an interview from earlier a few months ago with the 6th annual International AIDS Society Conference was held in Rome this summer, and LifeLube.org's director Jim Pickett attended. Jim's also a frequent contributor to the Windy City Queercast. One of the hot topics was the prevention trials, PrEP, that we discussed back a few months ago. And even though we discussed the recent studies that had come out on the podcast, the official dissemination of the results happened in Rome. And all of the debates on an international level began around PrEP is for whom and how do we PrEP and how do we expand the treatment, and all of this just heated up in conversation. So Jim is here to tell us more about this expansive conversation starting around HIV and AIDS, drugs and prevention. Hey, Jim, how are you?
I'm great, Amy. Thanks.
How was Rome?
So Rome was amazing.
Have you been before?
You know, I had been before. I was there for just a few days en route to another part of my vacation.
Yep.
So this time I was actually there for 10. I was working most of the time.
Right.
But still, there's so many worse places than you can work.
Yes.
Than Rome.
Exactly.
Can't
the
complain.
Fabulous
it was lovely.
Food and the history and the fabulous Italians saying ciao and gelato and
The food and the people, just everything was beautiful, beautiful.
Well, you were there for a really important reason. Talk to me first about how the International AIDS Society Conference began. This is its 6th year.
Well, so this is a very sciencey conference. It alternates with the big, huge, worldwide conference called the International AIDS Conference that was in Vienna last year and will be in Washington, D.C. this year.
Wow,
or
that's
not
exciting.
This year, in 2012.
Right.
So that's like the big mama that has about 20, 25,000 people. This is a smaller sister and about 5,000 people. And it's very, very focused on science.
Right.
So it's super, super, super sciencey, where the other conference kind of encompasses a much broader perspective. But, you know, the title of this conference is actually the Conference on HIV Pathogenesis, Treatment, and Prevention. So if that gives you a sense for what it's about,
right.
It's very kind of just that word pathogenesis alone lets you know that, you know, it's a little geeky.
Yeah. Well, so for those of us who don't think we're very scientific, or we're kind of wondering what did this conference practically net for the HIV AIDS community, for the gay community? Talk to me a little bit about the new prevention research that was reported on and about at the conference.
Yeah, so last November, just backing up a little bit, we got a study results from a trial called IPREX among about 2,500 HIV-negative gay men, and it was shown that using Truvada daily could reduce your chances of getting HIV by 44%. So that was really significant, and that was among gay men in a number of countries, Brazil, Ecuador, Peru, South Africa, Thailand, and the United States. So now flash forward to this conference, and two studies came out showing that this strategy, using an antiretroviral drug every day in people who are HIV negative, this strategy was shown to work among heterosexuals. So it was huge. And there were two big studies that reported out. One was called the Partners PrEP study, and another one was a CDC study. Mm-hmm. The Partners PrEP study involved serodiscordant couples. So they were heterosexual couples where one individual was HIV positive and the other negative.
Okay.
And they gave, you know, a daily dose of either tenofovir, Truvada, or placebo, a phony pill, to the HIV negative person. And what was discovered was the overall reduction in risk was significant, from between 62% and 73%.
Wow.
So huge, huge, huge.
Now this is a sample of heterosexual people only.
Yes, this was only heterosexuals, and they were African serodiscordant couples in Kenya and Uganda.
Okay. Now, so would we have a feeling that there would be a difference in heterosexual couples and homosexual couples? I mean, what were they trying to isolate that, or?
Yeah, there's
is primary, that a stupid question?
No, it's not actually. And on first blush, it sort of seems like, well, what? Why would it be any different?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the human
blood
immunodeficiency
or semen,
virus.
Or, yeah, right.
But there's different modes of transmission that are primary. So among gay men, the primary mode of transmission is unprotected anal intercourse.
Right.
Among heterosexuals, yes, there is unprotected anal intercourse that happens, but the primary mode of transmission is unprotected vaginal intercourse.
Okay.
So it's a different form of transmission, and the drugs show up in your various body parts in different levels.
Gotcha.
So we need to test among all the different populations to make sure it works. You can't just assume.
Mm-hmm.
There's currently a study underway in Thailand, another PrEP study testing daily dosing of an antiretroviral drug among injection drug users, because that is yet another way that HIV can be transmitted through a tainted needle in your bloodstream.
Right.
So that is also different than the other two routes of exposure.
Right, right.
This is why they have to do a number of different studies to prove that it works in a number of populations.
Right, right.
So just about the same time, well, actually the same time that Partners PrEP, this partner study, reported out another study, this one a CDC study, among about 1,200 heterosexual, again, men and women, not in couples, that took place in Botswana. These folks took either Truvada or placebo. They didn't know what they were taking. And when the results were revealed, overall efficacy was 63%.
Wow. So there's a consistency there with those two studies.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they can't really be compared. It's comparing very different apples and oranges, but they're high results. And both studies also showed even higher efficacy among people who actually, were taking the drug in a more adherent fashion, who were more adherent, who had more likelihood of having drug in the bloodstream. So these results, coupled with the IPREX results among gay men that came out last year, this sort of trifecta really basically says we know PrEP works, and we need to now not only consider how we're going to implement this or where we're going to implement it among gay men and other men who have sex with men, but also heterosexual individuals around the world. In many parts of the world, you know, it's a strongly heterosexual epidemic.
Right.
Especially
in the African country, on the African continent, of which many of these studies were taking place.
Yeah, there's high rates of HIV just among the general population. There's also high rates among gay men as well, frighteningly high.
Mm-hmm.
But the general population in many of these countries has a high level of HIV in it across the entire population.
So hearing these...
So this is...
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
I was just going to say, so this is really, really significant, and while it's really exciting and significant, it also brings up tons and tons of questions about how we can possibly deliver this during, we're kind of in an economic meltdown around the globe, and we're having a hard time meeting, getting people on treatment who need treatment, let alone giving HIV drugs to people who aren't infected.
Mm-hmm.
So lots and lots of debates. This, while it solidified the science, It just heated up the debates.
What do you think, what kind of impact were different people at this conference, saying this would have on their communities? And what were the most vocal voices who were the most vocal at the conference?
Well, there's a lot of excitement, but no one knows what in the world we're going to do with all of this now.
Mm.
It is very daunting. We don't know how to deliver medications like this in an HIV context to people who are HIV negative.
Mm.
And, and we're doing a lousy job getting medications to people who are HIV positive.
Right.
in this country, in the United States, and all over the world. So there's lots of concerns about, okay, this is significant, this is important, but now what? And how do we mesh this in with condom promotion, with needle exchange, with circumcision programs in Africa, with prevention of mother-to-child transmission programs, treatments. You know, there was another big study that came out that showed that people on treatment are significantly less likely to pass on HIV to their partner. Mm. There was a huge study called HPTN-052 that had about 1,700 couples that were, again, serodiscordant, when one was positive and one was negative.
Okay.
And the couples were randomly assigned to two different arms of the study. One arm, the couple, or the individual who was positive, started on antiretroviral therapy treatment immediately. And in the other arm, the individual was HIV positive, delayed starting ART treatment or antiretroviral treatment until they had a couple of clinical markers that are the sort of the norm in many parts of the world of when you would begin treatment. So some started treatment right away, regardless of clinical markers, and the other waited. And it showed that the folks who initiated the treatment early had a 96% reduction in HIV
wow.
transmission to their negative partner.
Wow.
So this is enormous. This basically says that if you are HIV positive and you are on antiretroviral therapies and you're on them successfully, they're working for you, and you're adherent to them, you are very, very unlikely to be able to transmit HIV.
Wow.
A 96% reduction is pretty damn high.
Yeah.
Now, of course, you got to take into consideration, you know, if you have an STD or something that can change that formula, because STDs are a kind of a doorway or a portal mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. HIV, because mm-hmm. it's a break in your skin. But 96% is huge.
Yeah.
So then that we have this other side of the debate where it's like, well, we now know that treatment for people with HIV is a good thing. In many cases, we're not exactly sure the best time to start treatment in terms of how many T cells you have and where you're at clinically, but we know it's a good thing on the whole, if you just want to generalize. And now we know that someone who is HIV positive, who is on treatment, is also providing prevention benefits. They are not likely to pass on HIV.
Wow.
They are significantly unlikely to. So you can see where this debate starts to crystallize. Do we give HIV meds to people who are negative for them to avoid becoming infected? And that's a big and/or, do we give drugs to people who are already infected and get as many people on treatment as possible and thereby reduce onward transmissions because they're, you know, they just have so little virus that's just very unlikely to happen.
Yeah. Wow.
And that's another huge, so the implications of this are also, you know, there's all kinds of people in clinical need around the world who aren't on HIV therapy now. How are we going to expand the pot and put everyone on therapy, regardless of where they're at in their disease, whether they have 40 T cells or 500 T cells? How do we think we're going to do that when we're already missing, you know, millions of people?
What is there an arm of thought that, you know, who stands to benefit from this is the drug companies and, you know, more people now being on some sort of pill a day or, you know, whether you're positive or not positive, or as you said, no matter what level your HIV, you know, where your status has progressed?
Well, yeah, I think there are a number of people, there are criticisms there going, oh, this is just, you know, this looks like a perfect, you know, the perfect deal for big pharma.
Right.
Wow, now everyone who has HIV should just get on drugs, whatever their CD4 cells are. And on the other side is, well, if you're negative, you should be on drugs too.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't this a windfall?
Yeah.
And there's some, you know, I don't think that's totally invalid. In our country, we pay the most for drugs. We pay insane amounts for drugs. I mean, I'm HIV positive, and my drug cocktail a year is about $25,000. I wouldn't be able to afford it if I didn't have insurance.
Right.
Thankfully, in much of the world, they're significantly less. So, for instance, a year of Truvada in our country, there's some variance because of whoever the payer is, if it's a government payer, insurance, or an individual, but it's between about $7,000 and $13,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
But in the developing world, in the rest of the world, much of the rest of the world, that same drug for a year is about $100.
Mm-hmm.
Now, $100 in Malawi mm-hmm. is still a damn lot of money.
Right.
When we're talking, condoms are a lot of money. So it's still very, very pricey, but it's a very different, I think it's actually more possible where we actually have access to generics and we don't have to pay list price.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to do a lot of advocacy. All that said, globally, we have to do advocacy around the cost of drugs.
Right.
The cost of drugs are bankrupting healthcare globally. They're unsustainable, and we can't continue.
Right.
In our country or countries where they have access to generics, it's still too expensive, and people are still not getting what they need. So that is a huge issue. All that said, the pharmaceutical companies did not push this research.
Mm.
This came from universities and from the CDC and from the National Institutes of Health. Drug companies were not part of this research. They did not design the studies. They did not fund the studies. Gilead, who's a maker of Truvada and tenofovir, the two drugs that have been tested widely so far, provided the drugs for free, but they didn't have anything else to do with the trial. So they actually were reticent around, they've been reticent around their drugs being used for prevention because it's not their field.
Right.
Their field is treatment. And there's a lot of unknowns when you start offering these things for prevention. It's a very different landscape, and there's different concerns. And so that doesn't mean that they're now not thinking, we can make some money off of this.
Right,
but they didn't
lead this.
Advocates and community and science led this. And now we have something, a new tool that could potentially work for people who can't use condoms regularly or don't want to use them regularly for whatever reason.
Right.
Now they have something better than nothing. You know, I mean, before it was like, well, you don't use condoms, sorry.
Right.
Or don't have sex.
Right. Not any.
Well, telling
real.
People to be abstinent is, you know, only works. It's not a long-term strategy.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and you don't have to be mad at, you know, I mean, as you said, obviously the bad guy here, at least in not that there has to be a bad guy, but I just mean really the core issue, the core thing to debate and find some solutions to are the cost of these drugs and getting some sort of handle on a global level around the cost of drugs, how we distribute drugs and
mm-hmm.
coming up with some core policies. Is the World Health Organization having anything to do with that? I mean, what kind of global organizations can truly create policy or create ways in which to make some significant change? Because we are talking about some significant changes that have to happen around the world.
Well, you know, like groups like WHO and UNAIDS and international bodies and folks at the CDC in this country are developing guidelines
mm-hmm.
on how to use these new tools.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still really up to governments and funders around the world on how the money is going to flow.
Mm-hmm.
So the various huge funding mechanisms that we have, the Global Fund, we have PEPFAR, which is a U.S.-led fund, President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, and how they program those dollars,
right.
and how other big funders program their dollars or set aside dollars for these sorts of strategies, the big biggies like the Gates Foundation or what have you. They're the ones who are going to fund it. So there's policymakers who are, you know, working out how to make sense of all this and provide some guidance around it.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll still be up to countries and how much they have to spend to figure out how what they're going to spend it on. And I remember hearing a woman, a South African researcher, she was on a panel, and she's actually one of the people who is going to be writing a new set of guidelines for South Africa. Like, their whole AIDS plan is being rewritten now and updated.
Mm, mm.
And she said, you know, what I have to deal with now with this information is we have this amount of money. Now, does this mean I buy 500 million less condoms so I can provide PrEP to this group or that group? Do I not provide PrEP and just continue buying the billion condoms? Like, we have to make real nuts and bolts decisions here. Yes, we see these things work, but, you know, it's not unlimited. We don't have unlimited flowing dollars to do whatever we want with. We have to make really tough choices. And how do we make them? So that's where everyone's at. Like, we have this treatment works, prevention, drugs for prevention works. We know now better than ever, but we don't really know how to, you know, we don't really know how to get to where the rubber hits the road.
Right.
And so I think the next step for PrEP will be implementation projects, demonstration projects that can see how PrEP would be delivered. You know, how do you target the most likely person to benefit the most from PrEP?
Mm.
How do you get it to them? How do you ensure that they stay on that drug and their adherence? We don't know how to do that because we've never done it.
Right.
So studies like this are now being designed. Hopefully we'll get them funded, and we'll have a couple of practices basically to see, like, how does this work when you actually – we're not in a trial anymore. We're in the real world.
Right.
How do we get Joe, Mary, and Bobby to get on PrEP and stay on PrEP?
Right. Well, you started off this whole conversation saying, you know, this is a very geek scientific conference and that it rotates every other year with a conference that, to me, sounds, you know, more practical and people coming together once the scientists have done the research to now come together and say, what are the best ways to implement? What did you try? This is what we're trying. This is working. This is not working. And now it comes to the matter of business of starting the prevention and starting
right.
the actual practical use of what you've netted from the results of these trials. And those are two different things.
Yeah, and in the meantime, you know, the goal is that everyone goes back and keeps working and tries to get demonstration projects off the ground and to test this and then share their information and publish it and come to the next conference and talk about it and share best practices. And
mm-hmm.
But we're in the learning phase. We don't know, and we also. You know, there's another big bugaboo in this whole thing is that there's a significant amount of people who we're not reaching, who don't know their status, who are HIV positive, about 20% or so in this country. We're not reaching them.
Right.
So these are people who could potentially be candidates for treatment. They don't know their status, so they could be potentially putting themselves and others at risk. They don't
right.
know.
Right.
We haven't been able to get the people who are most impacted to know their status. We're still, I mean, we're doing okay. I mean,
yep.
4/5, but there's still about 20% that don't know.
Right.
And a lot of infections happen, a huge percentage of infections happen when people don't know their status.
Right.
So that's another huge piece of how you, without, you know, trampling on people's human rights and civil rights, how do you... get people to know their status and then get linked into the appropriate care that they need.
Well, and I think the more conversations we can have, and why I love your willingness to come and be on the Queercast with me quite often, is just so we can continue the conversation and have an open dialogue, and people understand how important it is to get their to know their status, to get tested regularly, to keep their mind, body, and spirit healthy. And you do such great work with that, and especially through, because we work in new media here in the podcasting world. I mean, going to a website where you can ask questions and you can read and you can talk with others. LifeLube.org is such a great resource for that. And this is a story that is going to continue to unfold, and more is going to be revealed as the work from the conference, the IAS conference, now goes out into many, many, many directions around the globe. And you're just one person in that, but an important person to us. So, Jim, we really appreciate it. More people can find out about the conference and kind of feel like you were there, minus the gelato and the scooters and the hot Italians. you can find all that information out at IAS2011. That's IAS2011.org. And of course, you can continue anytime, any day, to visit lifelube.org. If you're a gay man, you need access to complete health resources for a complete healthy life. Check out lifelube.org. And Jim, I hope you will continue to always keep us up to date on the work that you're doing and what's going on around the world with these very important questions concerning HIV and AIDS.
Let me just add one thing that we're going to launch, that we're launching like in the next couple of days. It'll
Excellent.
Be live by the time your listeners hear this podcast.
Great.
We're starting a new feature on LifeLube, the blog, called My Prep Experience.
Oh, good.
Where we're having real people mm-hmm. Either write in their experiences with PrEP or video them kind of a la It Gets Better.
Mm-hmm.
And share their experiences, the good, the bad, the indifferent, what they like, what they don't like, why they did it, why they're not doing it anymore, whatever. So it's called My Prep Experience. So if people want to get, this for me is where the reality is really important. Like, you can hear all the science all you want, but it's about real people's experiences and why they make decisions and how they worked out for them. So I think that could be really interesting for your listeners, and by the time this airs, there'll be plenty of things to read.
Excellent. Well, it always continues to expand, and you're continuing to provide another forum to continue the conversation, and that's fantastic. Jim, thank you so much.
Thanks, Amy. Thank you.
Got something to say? Call us today. 312-21-BE-GAY.
Well, everybody, I hope you're doing great. This is my birthday week. I age this week. Actually, I just get better. That's all I can say. I age like a fine wine. So clink a glass of wine for me. I think the cops are coming to take me away. I hear sirens in the background because they probably think I'm crazy. But I'm good, and I hope you're good. And I hope you have a beautiful, beautiful week. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.